Welcome, everyone, to Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we will take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandising, and the global fandom phenomenon that has shaped the landscape of science fiction for over five decades and counting. So step into our TARDIS and please enjoy our journey together here on Type 40. Now, you know, the TARDIS was never designed for one person, so myself, Kyle, is here. I've got my companions, my fellow co-hosts, and in this case, my fellow co-founder, too, Mr. Norman C. Lau is joining me on this journey in the TARDIS, and especially our Type 40 TARDIS. How are you doing, Norman?
Oh, I'm very excited. Very excited for this. This is our very first episode for a Doctor Who fandom podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. So, yes, welcome, everybody, to our very first official episode of Type 40, and you know, it's funny because no matter how many pilots there are for a TARDIS, because it's meant to have six, I believe,
something along those
active,
lines. Yeah,
something goes awry. Even no matter how prepared a Time Lord is to pilot that thing, so the more hosts for this show, probably the better at times, because there's so much stuff that we need to take care of.
Very, very true. And with that, it also comes to, you heard him on our mission statement, he is the newest member of the Fandom Podcast Network, and he is definitely not just a canine. Mr. Dan Hadley is joining us here in the TARDIS. How you doing, Dan?
Hello, everybody. Yeah, I'm even fully house-trained. Guaranteed. Paperwork, everything. You can check it later.
Yeah, just as long as sure you've had all your shots, Dan. That's the most important thing. So, Norman, before we get started with all of our time wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey fun that we're going to have here on Type 40, there's a fixed point in time we got to take care of first. So would you mind taking care of some business for us?
Absolutely. Since this is our first show, we'd very much like for everyone to make sure that you have our contact information just in case you want to let us know how we're doing, or just to leave us a review, or tell us what we've forgotten, or if we need to turn back time to make sure that we can get things on track again. So you can always find Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed. That's fpnet.podbean.com. You can also find us on the Podbean app at fpnet. You can find us on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. And you can also find us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and Type 40 Doctor Who. That's not actually physically type out Type 40 Doctor Who. That's T-Y-P-E 40 Doctor Who. You can also find us on Facebook on our new page, which is growing exponentially as the days go on. Type 40, a Doctor Who fandom podcast. And we will make sure that that address is linked to the show notes when we publish this show. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can email us at type40doctorwho@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter on our brand new Twitter page at Type 40 Doctor Who. Remember, that is T-Y-P-E 40 Doctor Who. You can find us on Instagram at Type 40 Doctor Who. And you can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter. Now, Kyle, where can our wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey fans find you across social media?
You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW and on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
And Dan, since you're now new to the Fandom Podcast Network, so all of our fans can find you on social media, where can they find you?
Yes, hello, everybody. You can get hold of me. You can follow me on Instagram at DanHadley_. It's pretty simple, as simple as I could get it. And I'm on Facebook. I'm spending a lot of time in the Type 40 group at the moment. It's fantastic getting a feel for the place, getting a dynamic going, getting to know so many new people who love Doctor Who seemingly just as much as the three of us do. Mm-hmm. So thank you all for joining. And watch this space, more to come.
Yeah, very, very, very true. And also, if you'd like to help support the Fandom Podcast Network and wear some of the logos and designs that we have across all of our cover art that you see on our webpage, you can go to our TeePublic storefront at tpublic.com/user/fandompodcastnetwork, or just search the Fandom Podcast Network on TeePublic to find all of those logos that you can put on t-shirts, mugs, hats, all that kind of stuff. And you can also find us and please leave us a review on the Fandom Podcast Network Masterfeed on iTunes. So we would love for you to leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. We love feedback in general, but obviously we're reaching high and shooting for those 5-star reviews. So that is how you can find us across all of social media.
Thank you, Norm. And you know what? We've got a lot of things to talk about with Who. It's a very special time for all the Doctor Who fandom there as we get ready for one of the biggest changes in the history of Doctor Who. And it's reflecting even in media that's coming out now. Real quick, guys, it was announced that during the World Cup final match on Sunday, we will get our first real preview of season 11 of Doctor Who, and we get to see a little bit more of our new Doctor, the 13th Doctor, Jodie Whittaker. I know you guys are very excited about this, and I know everybody out there listening, by the time you get this, that preview will have come out. I can't wait. I'll watch the game just for that.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I don't do sport if I can avoid it. But yeah, I'll be watching, of course I will. There's a real buzz out there. And you don't, in all seriousness, you don't have to watch the match to see, because it'll be straight on the BBC's YouTube channel and across all their social media simultaneously, we're told. So you'll be fed up of seeing it. You'll know every second of it by heart by the time you go to sleep on Sunday.
You know, that's an interesting thing you say, Dan, about that, because what happens when these things get released is because they are released, and they're released in really high quality content and high quality compression, every single detail of every single second is going to be poured over ridiculously with either a lot of adulation or a lot of scrutiny, because that's kind of the way the fandom goes nowadays.
Yeah, so it's what I call the Zapruder treatment.
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. You're right, because we're going to go frame by frame and we're going to figure out, you know, where the cross triangulation was, where the grassy knoll was, you know, all that kind of stuff, where the magic bullet hits. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's incredible. Like the shockwave that, how long do you think that the trailer is going to be?
This is it. Obviously, we're speaking from the time warp here. People listening to this already know they're probably shouting at their phones now. My guess is it'll be 30 seconds max. I'm not expecting a great deal because, of course, we're so close to Comic-Con, and there'll be probably a good 2-3 minutes worth of new Doctor Who footage rolling out there. So I view this, it is very exciting, but keeping that in check a little bit, this is the teaser. That'll be the trailer. But anything after all these months living on scraps, and what we've been able to piece together in our heads, it's kind of like a 4-course meal. They're spoiling us all of a sudden.
Now, Norman, what do you think? What do you think about time on this? I'm going to go maybe about a minute.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Because of, I think, how metered out that they're trying to control the release of all this information, I think that maybe the shorter the better, because, you know, like you said, Dan, by the time this comes out, we're recording this on July 14th. So by the time this episode is out and consumed by, our public, that trailer is probably going to be poured over quite a bit. And then they're going to release all of that lockdown information at San Diego Comic-Con, which is literally 5 days away. That starts July 19th. Did I say June? This is July 14th. Then San Diego Comic-Con happens July 19th?
Yes, just Thursday, July 19th, San Diego Comic-Con opens its doors. And really, the big attraction this year is Doctor Who and Hall H. That is getting the more hype than just about anything else at San Diego Comic-Con this year, Norman. And you know what? That's a really good transition point, because Entertainment Weekly, which is a very popular magazine here in the States, just put out their annual San Diego Comic-Con preview. And who's on the cover? Jodie Whittaker herself as the Doctor. I have read this issue, and there is a great cover page story where it kicks off their Comic-Con preview section that is all about the Doctor, Jodie Whittaker's excitement to be in the character, how she was cast into the role, which is a very interesting story. I don't want to get too spoilerific in here. Spoilers, as our The Great River Song would say, because it's a pretty brand new article. It just came out. But there's some great information in there. They talk about the fact that they're going back for the first time in a very long time to three companions in the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
So very excited about that. Definitely check out that article. And to me, that kind of leads into what our main topic is this week, gentlemen. A lot of people are jumping back onto Who. A lot of people had maybe not quite gotten off the Who bandwagon a little bit. Maybe they were a little burned out on Stephen Moffat. Maybe they weren't sure about Capaldi's run. Or a lot of people who, because of this change, who are classic Who fans, who haven't jumped back into Who from the modern Who I've talked to, have said, no, I want to see this. This is an historic year for Doctor Who. And Dan, I want to kind of just start with you real quick and just get from your perspective, what is the excitement level there with this big change coming?
I think that this is a real global response. I think it's largely the same all over the world, or certainly the territories that are showing Doctor Who. Probably the first time in its history this has been in unison so loudly. It's quite quiet in the UK at the moment, I think. But then again, we have just, you know, we just had the World Cup, and everybody was waving flags for that. And nobody really knows. The only question I keep getting asked is, when's Doctor Who coming back? You know, is it starting yet? When's it? And I've said, you know, to my friends, my family, you'll know about it. When it started, you won't need to ask. It'll all kick off.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of anticipation here in the States, in my area, Norman. I'm on the East Coast of the United States and Florida specifically for our listeners out there. You're out in California, Norman. What's been the general consensus around people you know for this upcoming season of Doctor Who? What's the excitement level?
Now, I wish I had a better pulse on that out here, because, you know, in our fandom bubbles, you know, we always hang out with groups of very like minds, and we all talk about things from kind of like a real time perspective. So when Jodie Whittaker was first announced, I think that maybe it's a West Coast mentality, but it was kind of like, yeah, that really should have happened, and it should have happened probably earlier than this. So that was kind of like the response I was getting. Because there have been in the last few years, there have been so many different and very really strong decisions on female casting, probably coming from, I guess, you know, like the casting choices, like, you know, Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, or who's the actress that plays Rey in Star Wars?
Oh, Daisy Ridley.
Right now. Daisy Ridley.
Also Sonequa Martin-Green and as the lead in the Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, her and Michelle Yeoh, and then the actress who was in Rogue One. I'm sorry, I'm terrible with names right now. So,
Felicity Jones.
Felicity Jones. So you have these strings of women who are leading all of these great fandoms. I believe that in one of that article in Entertainment Weekly, Chris Chibnall said that if we don't do this, then we're going to be behind the world. And I think that's a very fair statement, because In this day and age, and in the history of Doctor Who, in the pantheon of all of the lore, and Dan, please correct me if I'm wrong, Time Lords or Time Ladies are a thing. They're a fact. I mean, Romana 1 and 2, you know, like that's a fact. Missy, that's a fact. We've seen Time Lords on Gallifrey in the Council, women. So why not? There's no actual factual logical reason why the Doctor cannot be a woman.
I think that's open to interpretation. I mean, I'm going to disagree with you about Chris Chibnall's statement. I like Chris Chibnall a lot, and I like his work. We'll talk about that later. I think that was a silly statement of him to make. You've just pointed out how all these other franchises have been led by women for quite a while. And there's been a lot of gender swap versions in media lately, hell of a lot of female-led detective shows and thrillers in this country. I don't see how Chris Chibnall can claim to be leading something when he's doing it 2 to 3 years after everybody else. That being said, there is obviously an appetite to see this before Jodie was cast, and a great, and then even people who didn't know, because you know she wasn't a household name, but then again neither was David Tennant, certainly Matt Smith wasn't, but the generosity that she's received, you know, you can't argue with that. As regards the Time Ladies, I mean, you know, this is, yeah, there's always been Time Ladies. Stretching back, I mean, Susan was a Gallifreyan, not necessarily a Time Lady. We know that not everybody who lives on Gallifrey are Time Lords, but there's always been that. There's never been a reason as to why there wasn't females amongst that species and amongst that society, as you mentioned Romana in particular. You know, but whether they're one and the same Time Lord, you know, there's never been anything pointing as to that being possible before. In fact, you know, the language and the way their society appeared to be would seem to have suggested otherwise. But then they've never gone too deeply into Time Lord society. And there's been relatively few Time Lord stories and a lot fewer appearances by other Time Lords than I think sometimes fans are aware. You know, it's probably a little bit more open than people would believe. So it's very much, I mean, some of it you could say is headcanon. Scenes as Doctor Who, I say this quite a lot, and some people frown at me. I don't view Doctor Who as a science fiction show. I view it as a fantasy. And, you know, in fantasy, pretty much anything can happen. And, if you want to sort of remold things or make things up as you go along, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. Ideally, you know, mythology and lore, you know, particularly in an age where we've got everything on DVD or Blu-ray, we can go back and check. So it's nice when all these things stitch together and line up and whatnot. But creativity should always lead the way. And yeah. You know, I hope, obviously, I do hope that this decision has been made for the right creative reasons.
Yeah, no, those are good points, Dan. And we're going to address this a little bit more as we get a little bit more into this episode. But for me, as we get ready for the season 11 and our 13th Doctor, I think it starts, too, gentlemen, with taking a look back at the Doctor we had for the last three seasons. And, of course, that's the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi. And a fair shake statement would be he had a bit of a mixed run in his time as the Doctor. Norman, I know for you, you're actually going back now kind of playing catch up. And I think this is where I think it's key for a lot of people who are getting back into Doctor Who because of this change in Jodie Whittaker and their excitement for it. People have asked me, well, where's a good jumping on point? And yes, usually with the Doctor, it's always, if you jump on at the start of a season, especially when right after change, that's always a good jumping on point. But if you kind of want to get a little bit of history, I know you asked me about this and I recommended just going back and watching all of season 10, which was Capaldi's last season as the Doctor. And how's that experience been going for you, Norman?
It's actually really, really fun again. You know, I think that there's one point in time, I think with any fandom, whether it's Doctor Who or Star Wars or Star Trek, you know, they're so long in the tooth fandom wise that you get to a point where no matter how much you love something, it's eventually going to become less exciting over time. Because you're seeing things that are being repeated, patterns are being repeated. And by the time that Matt Smith regenerated into Capaldi, I just felt that I think it was just my time to take a break. I mean, even I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I had to take a break after a certain period of time. It's just my palate was bored and bland. I felt that the storytelling was bored and bland. But that wasn't because it was. It was just because that's the way that I was feeling about it. So after, you know, there's that old saying that, you know, time heals all wounds. Time. We're all going to laugh when we say time or something like that. So yeah, it does. And being kind of divorced from it for a while allows you to come back and take a look at it with fresh eyes and fresh enthusiasm and a new kind of like a rejuvenation, regeneration, if you will. I mean, you can you know, make those parallels. So I asked you, Kyle, like, you know, I want to come back. I want to watch it again. I want to give it a fair shake. And I think that, yes, you're right. Season 10 has been really exciting because it felt like it wasn't heavy. You know, the serialization of the story wasn't there. At least it wasn't in the first couple episodes that I watched, because it felt like, I love Doctor Who when Doctor Who does the whole things go bump in the night and the Doctor's not afraid to look under the bed and find something completely other than just a creaky floor or a creaky house in an episode, right? I always felt that it's always best when that there's just this underlying otherworldly, other dimensional issue that is the bump in the night. Because, you know, we all know that it started as a children's show for the BBC. Am I right, Dan?
Yeah. It was never made by the children's department, but it was always, it was positioned.
Or I should say like young adults, I should say.
Yeah, it was positioned for a family audience. It was, you know, created by a focus group.
Right.
To deliberately bring the family together at a point where the children were sort of coming in from play. And the football results were all coming in for the grown-ups, and you know, sort of when everybody was getting ready to spend a Saturday evening together.
So I thought you were right. I'm sorry, Dan. Thank you. I mean, I thought you were right, Kyle, about starting with season 10, because I just felt that you don't have to worry about so much history coming in, and then obviously it's leading to Capaldi's regeneration into Jodie Whittaker. And I don't think that's a spoiler for anybody.
Yeah. Now, Dan, I know one of the things, too, as far as with Capaldi's run, was a lot of people felt season 10 kind of, they felt like they finally got the Doctor everybody thought he could be. And a lot of people give credit to that, to Pearl Mackey being the new companion. Better chemistry with the 12th Doctor. And it just, he felt like he had really settled into the role in season 10.
Oh, he definitely came. I said this when we spoke before, but you know, I'm going to say it again. The versions we got in series 8 and 9, we sort of got two different versions of Peter Capaldi's Doctor. And it was a deliberate thing. It was, he asked for that contrast, but that it did come together. And you know, and I can understand entirely what Norm said, because the show seemed to continue in the same tone, speaking with the same voice for so long, because Stephen Moffat has been the showrunner for so long, the head writer for so long. But with Series 10, I think, obviously he wasn't going to be doing Series 10 originally. And I think that the wisest thing he did was to recognise that perhaps he needed what Norm needed. He needed that time away. He needed to take a little back seat and bring in more other writers. I mean, Series 10 was, I'm not sure how many of the writers were actually new. Probably fewer than I think, but they seem to be given greater scope than before, and develop that new relationship with that, all that extra passage of time with the Doctor, Bill, who, you know, I've spoken with great passion about how much I love Pearl Mackey, how much I love Bill. So I'm going to mention Nardole instead. He was also a big part of Series 10's appeal. Against the odds, you know, character I certainly didn't like at first when he first appeared, but the three of them, and then Missy as that fourth what would you call it, wild card element. You didn't know what you actually, I've got to be careful what I say there, because how deep are we into series 10 now, Norm? How many have you watched?
I would say six episodes,
you know, so I'm going to leave it there. But yes, I mean, the palette has hopefully been cleansed for you by those six episodes. You can see a drastic difference. How long was it between series, between 9 and 10? Quite a lot of that. They just had time to nail things down a little bit and, I believe, focus on what Doctor Who, on bread and butter Doctor Who. Fantastic storytelling pitched at the right level for both casual fans and those who are like us. And for every age group, you know, you could miss an episode through no fault of your own, if you can ever miss a television show these days. And if you see it next week, it's not the end of the world. You don't have to, you think, I can't watch it this week because I missed last week's. With Series 10, you've got you've got that kind of anthology approach again back. You know, I could rave on about series 10 for the length of this show. But, you know, it was a great pickup point and great advice from Kyle as to, you know, I know it's simple advice and it seems like it's under your nose. Just watch the last ones. But it's not always the case. In this, it was. It's a perfect lead from what's to follow, just as you said.
Yeah, and I think the thing with season 10, as far as the impact it had for the 12th Doctor, is I think it really raised his popularity level. I think a lot more people were accepting of the Doctor at that point. And I think what this 10th season and Capaldi's performance in the 10th season brought was also a lot of classic Who fans who weren't real happy with the direction Moffat had taken in the last couple of seasons. And a lot, I know there was a group of fans out there who were tired of seeing this young, handsome Doctor and kind of always wanted to see more of this Doctor back in the Tom Baker, even the first, second Doctor. And I think he brought a lot of that audience kind of back and got their attention again with 10, because I think season 10 felt a lot more like classic Who than any of the modern stuff really truly has.
He was more benevolent.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Professorial.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, Kyle.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like he was kind of teaching Bill as he was going along, and I think that's one of the things that happened in season 8 and 9 was it felt like Clara was actually smarter than the Doctor at times. And I think that turned a lot of people off because we lost our point of view character. And I think Bill brought that back to everybody.
I've not considered that, but you're probably right. I mean, we enjoy seeing those characters grow, the second leads. I mean, you know, if you ask Russell T. Davies, he always insisted that the companion was the lead in the first place. You know, he's got a fair point there too. But we want them to grow, but we don't want them to overshadow and for their story to take over perhaps quite so much. I do know people who did find that a problem. Now you've mentioned it, thinking back.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is though is that you know what we have now is what we have. But let's look forward a little bit now, gentlemen, because obviously we are welcoming our new Doctor and our first female Doctor. And an actress who I have been a fan of for a very long time, and that is Jodie Whittaker. Now, for a lot of people, I think, especially in the U.S., there's two things she's probably most known for. That's her performance on Broadchurch, as well as the sci-fi cult classic, which also introduced the world to John Boyega, Attack the Block. Norman, when was the first time you were exposed to Jodie Whittaker?
Oh, definitely it was Broadchurch. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of... I do a lot of BBC searches, and sometimes when I feel like American TV is not providing me the quality entertainment value that I want, I'll always dive into something on the BBC just because I feel like I've always been thoroughly surprised at even at shows that I've never, ever, 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 ever seen before or even heard of. So, but I don't really know her work deeply, which is kind of why I'm really excited about seeing her as the Doctor, because I'm going to be looking at her inhabiting this character. I knew Capaldi here and there. I loved him on Musketeers. And one of the reasons why I was really mad that he was the new Doctor is because he was supremely amazing as Cardinal Richelieu in that series. But I was also excited for him to do his dream job, you know, so as he self-admitted. So that's fine. I can't hold that against him. But, you know, for the others, like, you know, Matt Smith didn't really know his work. He very much inherited the Doctor. So every Doctor, with maybe the exception of Christopher Eccleston, because I knew his work before, every Doctor has been a Doctor that's been able to inhabit that character because I don't really know their previous body of work. So I don't think she's really any exception. So it'll be interesting to see how the writers handle her. I don't think that the talent is an issue. I think that how the writers handle her inserting the first female Doctor into the genre is really going to be kind of a very delicate balancing act.
Yeah. Now, Dan, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seemed like a lot of people were very thrilled with the fact that it is Jodie Whittaker who is coming in as the Doctor. A lot of people, she has a very big fan following over on that side of the world.
She does. I think for the people who did know her by name, then they didn't really need to know any more. But there are people who didn't know her by name, but would know her face. Oh, it's the girl from this, or wasn't she in that? Or, I can't quite place this. Or when you get talking to people and they say, oh, she was brilliant in that episode. Well, that episode of Black Mirror. It was an episode of Black Mirror that she's
in. Oh, yeah, she was phenomenal in that episode.
And she pops up in all these little series, sometimes where in quite small roles, or she just knows how to, she seems to know and have this very naturalistic way of inhabiting these roles. And she reminds me, people are comparing her to all the other Doctors constantly, all the time. That's in the eye of the beholder, really, I suppose. But she reminds me very much of Chris Eccleston, in the sense that there is this authenticity to everything that I've seen her in. And obviously, she's not been around quite as long as Chris Eccleston has. But the impact, the impact of her work, particularly in Broadchurch, I don't know how anybody could fail to be moved by that. I mean, that role as the grieving, and at times the grieving mother. I mean, at times it was very difficult to watch. And then you compare that with the everyday character that she played in Attack the Block, which is a normal woman living a fairly normal life, who gets pulled into this massive sort of culture clash between the gangs and the aliens and things. And she's kind of more the everyman figure in that than anybody else, how she copes with what she's exposed to. And I've been going back all year and picking out bits of Jodie's career, some of which I'd seen before when it was on, and some that was new to me, and trying to sort of piece together what she could bring to the Doctor. But I think Attack the Block is a great indicator of certainly one side to that, and heroism, as well as compassion and that sort of motherly instinct. But then you've got things like the small role that she got in the two Centrillions movies, where she plays a sort of receptionist who's a bit kooky, a bit off the wall. And there's, what else am I thinking back? A film that I particularly like is quite early on in her career, called Venus, where she plays another young person opposite Peter O'Toole. I think it was her first film role. And the fact that she's in it for as much as Peter O'Toole is, and doesn't disappear against this huge performance. You know, Peter O'Toole, he was very similar to Tom Baker, not the most naturalistic actor in the world. And she goes absolutely toe-to-toe, excuse me, toe-to-toe with him all the way through that.
Yeah. She is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to bring a great perspective to the Doctor. And, but she is not the only thing that's new for Doctor Who this season, because, Norman, we have a new showrunner.
Yes. Now, Chris Chibnall, I'm not familiar with. So now I'm working into new territory for Doctor Who, which is exciting for me. So,
yeah. Well, you are probably a little more familiar with Chris Chibnall than you realize, because he actually has written past episodes of Doctor Who, but he was also very instrumental in writing a lot of Torchwood.
Right. You're right.
So,
yes.
He is very familiar with this universe and coming back to this universe. But I think a lot of people, I think for the most part, everybody felt it was time for a change. Stephen Moffat had been running things for a very long time. And I think a lot of people are very excited for the new voice. And I am very ecstatic with the fact he does have already a pre-existing relationship with Jodie Whittaker, because obviously his work on Broadchurch brought this in. And from what he's talked about in interviews I've read, as far as the auditioning process was, they auditioned several people and everybody kept coming back to Jodie and what her presence was and the energy that she gave, and actually helped him inspire to write more things for the Doctor. So I think getting this new voice in. And I think somebody who has a voice going back to some of the Russell T. Davis time with David Tennant and things like that, and with the whole Torchwood period, I think it's going to bring some classic, modern classic, I guess is a better word to it, voice yeah. back to the Doctor. Dan, what do you think about that?
I think that it's a very similar situation. I mean, we understand that they did audition a few actresses. I'd be surprised if there was many. But I don't necessarily think that was a bad thing either. You know, people talk, people jibe and gently take the mick out of people like Tim Burton and Johnny Depp for continually repairing to work on new projects. And yeah, maybe there is a saturation point. But the way I see it, you know, Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall have worked together apparently four or five times, a couple of things on the stage and various other projects. And if they have this working relationship where, you know, it's like an artist and a muse, isn't it? If he sees something in her that he keeps coming back to, who are we to argue with that? You know, he's the creative. And if they connect on that level, and I can understand if it, once he gets this set in his head, you know, apparently, yeah, it was exactly the same when Matt Smith auditioned for Stephen Moffat. Stephen Moffat originally had his intent was to cast an older actor. He saw Matt Smith, and it didn't matter who they brought in afterwards. I think Matt Smith was a second auditionee. It didn't matter who they brought in afterwards. They couldn't stop thinking about Matt Smith's Doctor, about giving that to the public. And I think it was undoubtedly similar with Jodie's Doctor. I think she's obviously... you know, she's a strikingly beautiful woman and has this sort of this sort of inner strength that, you know, sort of roles that we'd seen before. And depending on how long an audition piece would be, I'm not sure how long the average audition piece would be, about 5 minutes max. You know, you can only wonder. Maybe we'll get to see one day. But I think that's the sort of thing that you know, we've got to trust in these people that, as I said before, that's creatively led. And they're going to take us to a place and tell us new stories. And in time, maybe unpeel some new sides to the Doctor because of whatever they've discovered together.
Now, what are your feelings about Chris coming on and be kind of running the TARDIS for us and pointing us in a new direction?
Huge excitement. I mean... In a sense, they've gone for a man who on the surface is around the same age as Stephen Moffat. You know, he's obviously he's another man. You know, so on the surface, you could say it's a safe pair of hands. But, you know, when you look at any, he's worked on Doctor Who before, and there are fans out there who really vocally are underwhelmed by his past Doctor Who work. But I don't necessarily think that that's any indicator either. You know, he's written for Doctor Who very sparsely. What interests me more is the work he's done on other things. Stephen Moffat was pretty much always a jobbing writer. You know, he'd had his own series before, but when he came to the showrunner's position, he was fairly new to it. Chris Chibnall has been running his own shows for the best part of 10 years. Obviously, hugely successful. Broadchurch. Even before that, you've got... you know, you've got Camelot, which I thought was a really fun show, King Arthur show. He was entrusted with the second series of Torchwood. He actually showrun the whole of that. So even the episodes that people that people did like that he didn't write. Now, he was responsible for the shape of all that too. But, you know, he was also entrusted by the Dick Wolf production company to run Law & Order UK. You know, that's a big brand, and he that was pretty much his to build that long running show in the UK to those boundaries. You know, this guy's got more form than people give him credit for, and the fact that it is a new voice. Stephen Moffat has got such a distinctive way of offering stories, and Chibnall's, I think there's going to be a lightness of touch that the series is in desperate need of, and that the audience wants, and that will bring. I think he's also got that sort of one foot in the kitchen sink drama origins that Russell T. Davis has. So I think, I mean, you know, this is no great insight, but you know, I think we're going to spend a bit more time in contemporary Earth than we have done of late. And I expect that when we do know the full complement of writers that have assembled under Chris Chibnall to work on this, you know, because they've had a writer's room as well for the first time. There's going to be a lot of standout new talent that is going to set the course for Doctor Who for the next 3 or 4 years, maybe longer. Maybe they'll be around longer than Chibnall, but it's the new broom, isn't it? It's the clean slate and the new broom. And for anybody who is fixated on some of his older episodes, they may not have liked. I'd say, you know, give it time, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think this is one of those things too. We've had the same voices for so long on Doctor Who that getting a new voice is, even though everybody's, I think, is ready for a new voice, it's still going to be an adjustment period. Let's give them a chance to get their feet in there and figure out what they're doing and see what direction they're going to go in. And I know that's something that I think, especially with Doctor Who, you have to have a little bit of that patience as they develop things, because the thing with Doctor Who is it's going to change on a moment's notice, and it's going to hit you with something from out of left field that you weren't expecting. And you just got to go with it and roll with the punches. But I think the last thing, gentlemen, that I want to discuss before we close out this episode, and I think it is a valid discussion. I know we talked a bit about it when we first started talking about Jodie Whittaker and stuff, is we are for the first time getting a female doctor. And one of the things that I've noticed is, and something I think the Who fandom community should be very proud of, is even people who aren't sure about this are at least keeping an open mind and are willing to give things a chance. I'm a firm believer. I think it is time for this. I think the time to do this is now. They have an outstanding actress doing this, and I think they've been kind of setting this up for a while, especially Stephen Moffat, because and this is just my personal opinion, and I'll ask you guys what you think, because I kind of think River Song was always intended to kind of give us a preparing for a possible female doctor down the road. Also, let's not forget in season 9, in the finale episodes where they went back to Gallifrey, we saw male Time Lords regenerate into female Time Lords. And so they were starting to establish that even then, and of course reinforced with the Missy character. But Norman, I want to get your perspective on this first, because I know you're very excited about the change.
Well, I mean, I don't want to throw a line out there that's so glib as saying, like, well, you know, it's about time, or, you know, it should have happened all along, or, you know, or it's part of kind of like the culture that the world is taking right now when it comes to empowering, you know, lead female characters. But what I am really excited about, and it's something that, because I have, you know, a niece that's the right age to watch a show like this, I'm excited about seeing the reactions to young female fans, girls in their teens, girls in their early 20s, young women, and even women now, responding to her character. Because what I think is really important in fandom is that everybody gets a chance to be able to associate with their hero. Okay, so in this case, I love seeing kind of like the gender swap cosplays with 10 and with 11, in some cases 12, but it's still gender swap cosplay. You know, they don't really have the doctor of their gender, and now they do. And I think that's very inspiring for a whole collective group of new fans, younger fans that are coming in. I mean, for me personally, however long that Jodie Whittaker goes, I would love to see an Asian doctor, because I would love to see myself as being able to actually play to that actual racial characteristic. You know, I can do that with Star Trek. I can do that to some degree with Star Wars. But with Doctor Who, because there is all of the 55 years of men who have played the Doctor, now you have this completely new audience that's going to be able to usher in so much enthusiasm, because now they have a Doctor that they can literally attach themselves to from so many different perspectives, spiritually, emotionally, physically, that it will drive, I think, so much excitement and creativity into the fan space as opposed to before. So that's why I'm really excited about her. It's not necessarily that she's not going to be great, because I think she is, but I want to see those photos where, you know, where there are these young cosplayers dressed up like Jodie Whittaker's doctor, and just kind of like having those big smiles on their faces, like, you know, that's them. That's their fandom. And that could take them to so many new levels of inspiration for their own lives. So I'm very excited to see that.
Yeah. And for me personally, just real quick too, for me, it's not even so much that it's a male or female doctor. It's getting the right person to be the doctor. And I think Jodie Whittaker is brilliant casting. She is an amazing actress. I think she is going to take this, make her own version of the doctor that fans are going to love beyond gender, race, anything like that. She's going to be an outstanding doctor, and that is why I'm excited about Jodie Whittaker about this. But I know, and I found this interesting because I have some friends, both male and female, I've spoken to, who are old school Doctor Who fans, who've been Doctor Who fans for a very long time. Tom Baker is their favorite doctor, and they're even a little, they're going in with an open mind, but they're like, you know, the doctor's always been a gentleman, and that's something that they. And again, this is coming from both male and female perspectives. They're not sure on this yet, and they kind of get their feeling. And Dan, I we've had some conversations about this, and I know you've had some trepidations.
Oh God, that's putting it mildly. This is time for my confession. I have always been against the idea of a woman playing the Doctor. The Doctor should be female. They should make this gender swap with the character. And I still feel that way, which might seem strange considering that I've just spent 10 minutes raving about Jodie Whittaker things about trusting the creative process. Yeah, but I remain unconvinced. I think that, and obviously, putting this opinion out there, you know, it's... I've been called a few names for this, which, you know, isn't particularly helpful. And, it's quite funny. I'll talk at some length in the future, I suppose, about why I feel this way. I feel it. Look, Doctor Who, it's our connection with Doctor Who is on a very, sometimes, intimate level. And depending on where... when in our lives and how we come to the series and the character, you know, it can be compromised by things like this. And I won't have it that this, you know, because I've been dismissed. I don't know why everybody's upset about it, because there is a large portion of the fan base, you know, roughly a third by surveys that aren't happy about this. And, you know, they get dismissed as, why wouldn't you accept this? Why wouldn't you accept that? And you know, you must be a sexist or whatever else. And that, I think that's desperately unfair. So you're probably wondering, well, you know, why? You know, why are you still there? Why are you still watching? And, the reason I do try and look at things from different sides, and everything that Norm said, the people that he described earlier on, you know, I'm a part of the Doctor Who fan community, as you may have noticed, you know, and who can't respond to seeing people's excitement with a smile? You know, I think it's important that people who are resistant to this, however vocally, that not be spiteful about it and be generous about it at all times. But I got to thinking, and the reason why I'm sticking with it, there are several reasons why I'm sticking with it. I love Doctor Who. You've probably noticed I love Doctor Who. And it is very much a place that you go to. And although that character is at the dead center of everything, the moral center, the center of our attention, it is an entire environment and a way of telling a story. That's important to me. And then there's the simple fact, I realised that if somebody was to tap me on the shoulder or send me a message through social media saying, hey, you know that actress you love, Jodie Whittaker? She's been signed by the BBC to lead a brand new science fiction show in prime time for 10 episodes this year. Are you in? I'd go, yeah. I'd be right there. I'd be immediately receptive to that. It's just, you know, when it becomes Doctor Who and she's playing the Doctor, there's that sort of disconnect for me. It directly sort of clashes. It's something that, you know, I was never convinced by Michelle Gomez playing Missy in Truth. And you know, with hindsight, I've come to believe that that is more down to the way that the Master, that character was written, than anything Michelle Gomez was doing. And I'm trusting that Chris Chibnall is going to make a better job of offering the gender swap here with the Doctor than Stephen Moffat did with the Master in Missy. So it's they're very mixed feelings for me, and I hope obviously by Christmas I could be singing a different song altogether. And if people want, I'll talk some more about this. But part of the fun of listening to Type 40 as it rolls out, hopefully, is hearing the contrasted opinions and where I'm coming from, and hopefully over the 10 episodes, see and hear this dissenting voice get one over. We'll see.
And that's the 10 episodes of the series, and not the 10 episodes that were for Type 40. Yeah,
we're hoping, exactly.
We hope to do more than 10 episodes.
10 episodes of Series 11.
No, but Dan, I want to punctuate something that you said, and I think it's really fair, and I want the listeners out there to see where Dan's coming from. Dan has a certain love for Doctor Who and a certain opinion of Doctor Who, and that is 100% completely valid. It's his opinion. It may not be yours, but when we come to opening up ourselves here on a podcast and making probably some unpopular points, we do it from a position of respect and positive critique. It's always good to have sometimes, you know, different opinions and even disconsenting opinions. Absolutely. Or disconcerting opinions. But it's done with respect to each other's viewpoints. Not everyone's going to be on board with Jodie Whittaker for whatever reason, and that's okay. But I completely respect what Dan is saying, because he's saying it with a lot of exposition, and he's expounding on his points as the reasons why. The kind of critiques I will not accept are, he's like, just because. That's not good. That is not a good critique. I don't want any of that kind of critique on our page. I don't want any of that kind of discussion, because that discussion just fosters trollism, and I don't think that that's worthy of our audience or our people on Facebook.
Norm,
so,
it doesn't help anybody in the long run to hang on to any kind of anger about this decision. There's a hashtag set up, hashtag Doctor Who protest about this, and you know, it's completely unnecessary. You know, a decision has been made, and this is happening. And you know, none of us have to watch Bylaw. There is plenty of other Doctor Who, past and present, if you listen or read licensed merchandise for us all to enjoy.
Right. No, you're 100% right, Kyle. We've had this discussion before, and maybe this is a way that we can start looking at some. I don't know, maybe discussing something like this in the future, is that no one is forcing you to watch any of this.
No. I hope that for anybody out there who's listened to that guy on Type 40 saying this, you know, I hope you can tell that I can be quite good humoured about it. I can laugh about this. I can look on the upside. And at some point in the Gallifreyan future, I'll be happy to talk about the reasons why I feel as I do in my own personal connection with Doctor Who and the Doctor. And, you know, we'll see where we stand there. And as I've said, this is going to be fun. All of it's going to be fun. And I wouldn't miss a minute of it.
And you bring up a good point, Dan, and you brought up a good point too, Norman, with this. Again, it's personal opinion, and we're all entitled to that. And one thing, again, and I brought this up earlier on in the podcast, is it's something I've seen for the most part with the Whovian fandom, is nobody is trying to force their beliefs on anybody else. Everybody's just like, you know what? This might not be my thing. This might not be my doctor, but I'm fine with that. You know, as long as we're getting good stories and it's being done in the spirit of Doctor Who. You know, some people aren't going to like Jodie. Some people are going to jump in because of Jodie. But that's the point. And like with anything else, this is not ours to own. This is ours to enjoy. And we enjoy it how we choose to enjoy it. And there's nothing wrong with how we choose to enjoy something in fandom. what's wrong is if we feel like we have to force our ideas onto everybody else because we think our ideas are the only way it should be. And that's not what fandom is about. Fandom is about everybody enjoying it for what they feel it is and what it brings to them. And there's no right or there's no right or wrong with that. And I think that's something even the Doctor has through the years portrayed and something he's represented, because Doctor Who above anything else is about change. We've had 13 Doctors over 55 years. That's an amazing time span. Change is always going to happen. You might not like it, but enjoy it. You still have your fandom. Just because there's something right now you don't like doesn't mean something else isn't going to come along later on that you do like. Again, be like Dan. Be like Dan. See, this is just my personal feeling, but that I'm not going to stop take my personal feeling and prevent anybody else from enjoying it. And even in Dan, you are going in at least willing to watch it, give it a chance, and hey, hope maybe your mind gets changed. And I give you credit for that.
Well, sometimes this is what you've just said. It's sometimes the hardest lesson to learn, and it can happen at any point in your life. You know, I've been around a little, not as long as the Doctor, but I've been around a little. I've seen a few come and go. And even lately, I've accepted that, there are people who've come to Doctor Who since 2005, that to them, it's actually, not only is it not a big deal, it is actually quite a natural progression. It seems like the most natural progression for the show in the world. And, and that's so different to my view. But I have to accept that if enough people feel this way, like I said, 2/3 of fandom are not only all for this, but they are mad for it. As we say over here, we're mad for it. Are mad for it. And I can't argue. I can't argue with that. I would never argue with that. But sometimes when you can go through life assuming that your connection with something is universal, and it's the same for everybody else, and you feel this way about this character, and something is fundamental and unarguable and unchangeable, and then to find that compromised and challenged, it's often not pleasant. Probably never pleasant. It's not pleasant. And, it can take you down a peg or two. But in the end, it is sort of out of your hands. And you want to have a good time and be in, feel included in something? Or do you want to be the guy or girl? Because it's not just men that feel this way, and I won't have it that it is. Do you want to be the guy or girl sat in the corner with your arms folded at the party? It's never been my style. I don't think it's ever been your style, has it, Norm?
No, you're right. It's not about, it's not about just taking your ball and not playing with anybody. It's out of our hands. We don't make those decisions. The control that we have over our own fandom is whether or not we're going to try and make the best of a situation, maybe even possibly enjoy it more than we thought, or at least say, you know what, I'm not going to ruin anyone else's day with the way I'm going to approach this on, especially on social media. Because I think that's probably one of the biggest problems, is that if I don't like something, I'm going to make sure that nobody else likes it either, right? And that's not fair. And I really will not have that, at least in our social spaces, because I think that's detrimental, and it is a very serious poison that's permeated through social media probably ever since the first tweet or the first Facebook post. It's just right now it's the easiest way for fandom to be very pervasive, and I just won't have it. I won't. That, if anything, if I'll take a stand against anything, it'll be that.
Well, anybody out there who is feeling as I do, or even more so, come with me on this. Go through this with me. And, we'll see where we all are at the end of it. But it's certainly, if Doctor Who means anything to you, it's got to be worth hanging in there for the 10 episodes of Series 11 that are to follow. And that Christmas special, it looks like we're actually going to get after all, Kyle.
Yes, very excited about that. And so many great points brought up by everybody. And you know what? We're not that far off. I think San Diego Comic-Con next weekend, we're going to get a date when the season premiere will be. We pretty much know it's going to be sometime in October. I am very excited. I know everybody here is excited, whether you have trepidation or whether you're just ready to jump both feet in. And I know a lot of people are. You know what? That's what we're here at Type 44, is to cover all of it. And that's what we're here to do. And, And one of the things I say on our other show, Culture Clash, at the end of every week is enjoy your fandom. And that's the thing. Enjoy it. And I want to give you each chance to kind of give me a little bit of final thoughts about being ready for season 13. But before we do that, we have so many things here on the Fandom Podcast Network that we discuss besides Doctor Who. And we're going to let you listen to real quick to all the other and hear about all the other great things that are here on the Fandom Podcast Network. So sit back, enjoy, and hopefully, you know, if you're new to Type 40 and you haven't listened to anything else on the Fandom Podcast Network, we might grab something of your interest. So take a listen, and then we'll be back with our final thoughts as we prepare for season 11 of Doctor Who with the 13th Doctor. Hey, Kevin, I hear you're one of the Fandom Podcast Network's co-founders.
I heard the same rumor about you too, Kyle. Like the Three Musketeers, we would be incomplete without our third member and co-founder, Norman.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's an honor to be part of the Fandom Podcast Network with you two. Kyle, why don't you start us off and let everyone know what great shows we have on the network.
Absolutely. Starting with our flagship show on the network, we have Culture Clash, your weekly fandom news show covering everything, news, reviews, and whatever crazy things we can come up with. Of course, we also have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shematula, and Chris High. Kevin, what else do we have on the network?
Kyle, we also have Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. Also, if you're a hard rock music fan, I host the Hair Metal podcast as we rediscover the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. Norman, we're not done yet. What else have we got on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Well, Kevin, you and I co-host Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast covering all things Highlander. And I also co-host with you, Kevin, and Kyle, and other special guests, Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery, and the Orville podcast. But Kyle, last and certainly not least, what are the other shows on the network?
Well, for all you movie fans out there, this podcast is for you. We have Couch Potato Theater, covering cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. And for you football fans, we have this show for you, The End Zone, giving you all the great mediocre fantasy football advice you can get and covering everything the NFL. And finally, you Doctor Who fans out there, we have Type 40, a Doctor Who fandom podcast. Now, Kevin, can you tell everyone how to find all these great programs on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Sure, Kyle. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at the fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram under Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPodNetwork.
Also, please search Fandom Podcast Network on tpublic.com for our store, where you can find all our shows and their logos and great t-shirts and other fun items. Also, please search Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes and leave us a review.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and most importantly, enjoy your fandom. And we're back, and, you know, I'm just going to kick it right to you, Norman, first and foremost. We're getting ready for season 11. You have some final thoughts for people as they get into the home stretch here before we hit season 11.
Well, I think that everyone should just kind of like take a collective breath, especially if kind of like you're an older fan like me and obviously somebody who champions the classic fandom, as you've seen me post like all over my social media feeds. But I am really excited about it. Doctor Who has this great capacity, and pardon the pun, but not, to regenerate itself over time. And regeneration energy is very exciting. It brings back a lot of new life in a rearranged format, just the way that Time Lords regenerate. You know, their cells kind of like realign, and they're full and bursting with possibilities. And I think that's where a doctor can always go with a regeneration. Whether or not that is going to hit our expectations as fans, that's on a personal level. We've covered that very well in this show. But what I do really suggest is to do what Kyle, you know, advised me to do, and then to give that last season 10, Peter Capaldi's season 10, a shot. It will ramp yourself up. It will get you to the regeneration. And hopefully by that time, you'll be caught up with the momentum of going into Jodie Whittaker's season 11, yes?
Yeah, season 11.
Yeah. So enjoy it. For what it's worth, Doctor Who is going to be back, is going to be swinging for the fences, and it's going to be a very interesting time for fandom as we see her story unfold and the Doctor's story unfold as we take this next chapter in the lore. So I'm excited. I'm excited for what we're doing with Type 40. And please join us on this journey and enjoy the time that you have with us. So,
Dan, what about you? Any final thoughts as we hit the home stretch for season 11?
Well, as I say, if people are still talking to me, yes, I've probably said quite enough. I just hope everybody enjoys it. Enjoy the stuff that comes out of Comic-Con. Hopefully we'll get to see those panels in full, because Jodie's doing two. She's doing the Doctor Who one itself. And the Women in Science Fiction and Fantasy, I think it's called. So she's on two panels, and there's a further third panel specifically about the Doctor Who comics with some of the creators and the line editor there. So, you know, enjoy all that. Enjoy the countdown. By now, you've seen the teaser trailer. I hope you liked it. And, keep telling people, all those people who might be coming up to you and saying, when's Doctor Who back? Just keep telling them soon. October soon.
Well, you know, it's all timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly around here. And, you know, I am a huge fan of Modern Who. I am getting my education on Classic Who as we speak. It's a fun ride, and it's everything. And it's a brand new time for Doctor Who, and I think it's a great time to jump on. If you have been curious about what Doctor Who is all about, or if you've been away and you're excited about the change, or you're curious about what's going on, It's the perfect time. And, you know, I'm looking forward to what we're going to do here with Type 40 going forward, because we're going to cover all the aspects, whether it's Modern Who, Classic Who, some Torchwood, merchandising, Big Finish, everything. That's the goal here, Type 40, and we're going to have fun with it and just enjoy what is great about Doctor Who. So I just want to say, in closing, I'm Kyle, and on behalf of my co-hosts Norman and Dan, I want to thank everybody for listening and joining, and invite you to join us again next time here in the Type 40 TARDIS on the Fandom Podcast Network for great episodes of everything covering Doctor Who. And again, we're the Type 40 Fandom Podcast, and just enjoy the ride. And I guess finally for me, I'm going to say, as we get started, Geronimo! Bye.